Hey everyone, this is a bonus Q&A episode. I try and answer questions live every Thursday. You can sign up to come to my free live Q&A at schoolforthedogs.com/Q&A, and you will see the next one I'm doing. I then am trying to take recordings of those Q&As and post them here to the podcast feed. If you have a question, you can email me directly, Annie@schoolforthedogs. You can also go to anchor.fm/dogs and record your question there. Thanks for being here. I was going to wear sunglasses for this episode, but I think I can't see properly. Hey, Yolanta. Nice to see you. And Joan is here. Hi, Joan. I need a second to recover. It's been a bad day. I would say this has been a really bad day. Second of all, I just posted a podcast episode, which is bonus. Although bonus sounds like it should be like a nice cheery thing. It didn't feel like a nice cheery thing, but anyway, I felt like I needed to post this episode. And as I posted it, put the cap on my microphone has like a little thing on it, and it looks like a dog. Isn't that cute? Just no ears though. Anyway, as I it's actually the second part is funny. The second part is right as I posted this episode just now, I spilled an entire bottle of seltzer on my laptop. Which is not a little bit of water. The entire bottle of water just went over on my laptop. Fortunately, I have a desktop PC, so I have a computer, but it was anyway, and the first thing that happened today, which was much worse thing, is I just learned that my dog is dying. Yeah. It's like that phone call that you don't ever want to get. Well, I got that call this morning where the vet said that he has something in his liver that's inoperable, most likely. I mean, I guess I could get a second opinion, but sounds like this is probably it. And he's been in really good health up until pretty recently when a couple things started to seem off. He's 15 and a half. Yesterday was his 15 and a half birthday. And, they don't live forever. It's just processing. He's doing pretty well. We're going to give him something to help his appetite. But he's been his perky self, mostly. My daughter are so sweet together. And I'm really glad that she had the experience of having him as a dog, even though she probably won't remember it, but he's just been such an important part of my life for so long, and obviously now I have her, and it's different, but glad that they had a little bit of overlap in my life. Anyway,
It's just, that's the thing about having a pet. It's like, you know, this thing is like in your future with this, in this relationship. It just had the, hey, Rhonda. Amos was diagnosed with what seems like probably most likely inoperable cancer. And he has, I don't know. I mean, he's doing fine, but he's, you know, this is the end of our story together. I just found out. Anyway, yeah, I posted a podcast episode just before doing this because I felt like I needed to like put it out there in some way. Anyway, I'm still just trying to go on with my day and enjoy him. Maybe I'm gonna position him so he's at least in the picture. But I'd love to talk to you guys. This is why I was gonna wear sunglasses, but my secret's out. My eyes get very, very, I think particularly like swollen and pink when I'm crying. I like to think it's one of the more charming things about me. the other thing that happened, Rhonda, that you missed is, Rhonda, by the way, I asked Rhonda to be here. She is one of my oldest best friends and, he's getting a puppy this weekend after a lot of back and forth thinking about what dog to get. And I know she has some questions, and anyway, I was hoping maybe she and I could chat about some of the stuff that she's been going through. She is a rather famous journalist. You might know her as Rhonda Kaysen of the New York Times. We met when we both worked at the New York Observer in the early 2000s. So Rhonda, I'm glad you guys are here. And I think Joan is here too, and wanted to ask a question. I might take Joan's question first. I'm gonna put Amos on the bed so that he's right there. And oh, the other thing that happened, Rhonda, was I spilled water all over my computer, like just minutes ago. Just like completely doused my entire MacBook, whatever situation. Just like it was being baptized. Like, you have no idea how much water got on this computer. Okay, give me 1 second.
Amos, your presence is wanted on screen.
My guy. All right, you want to sit on the bed?
Can you sit on your bed? On the bed?
The prince is in his place now. All right. So yeah, it goes down in the book of bad, memorably bad days. Joan, let's see. I think if I accept you, if you join and I accept you, then you have to like rejoin, I think. So I just invited Joan. Let's see if I can get her in here. But anyway, this is supposed to be a Q&A. Ask me your questions, Joan, while I'm waiting for you to get here. I also want to, I want to share one other funny thing. I didn't share this in the podcast I just put up. There were just a few really funny things that happened in a row, and then this like terrible thing happened today, and then this other terrible thing happened. But the previous funny thing to before the laptop situation was I called my one of our babysitters, who's wonderful 16-year-old actress named Martina, who lives nearby, and she and her sister both babysit Magnolia. So I called her because I was trying to figure out, she had taken Magnolia for a walk. I was trying to find out where they were. I normally text her, but picked up the phone. And you know, they say like kids don't know how to use phones as like a medium anymore. And also, which I mean, I don't know if they say, I could say that's probably true. But also like kids, I mean, nobody like likes leaving voicemails. So it occurred to me, like, Martina, I don't love leaving voicemails, but I do. But I don't love listening to voicemails. Voicemails are, I used to be excited when I came home and there was like a beeping, light on my answering machine. Like, ooh, I have a message. And now I say I have a voicemail and they're like, meh. I don't know why that changed. Anyway, Martina, I'm guessing, does not check her voicemail very much. She probably does not get very many voicemails. She has certainly actively punished me for calling and attempting to leave her a voicemail. I don't think I will ever do it again, except for right this second, because I'm going to play you her voicemail. Because it's so punishing that I actually need to share it.
Oh?
Oh, hey, Martina. Can I listen to your voicemail again?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to call you back.
All
right. I think she'll think this is funny. I'm going to tell her that I did this. If she doesn't think it's funny, I won't share it. And meanwhile, I did this partially so that I could let Yolanta back in. I mean, not Yolanta, Joan. So Joan, if you're here and I invited you to speak, you got to do it from like a computer. You can't do it from your phone. And the room will, I think, kick you out and then kind of like invite you back in. Or else you can just put your question in chat. Okay, here's her voicemail.
Hello. Welcome to the amazing world of Martina. Okay, so you may be wondering what's going on right now. This is the voicemail of Martina. I am the voice of Martina. I am the mind of Martina. I hold everything containing Martina. So, that said, I would just like to say that this is cool, right? Because you don't really know if I purposefully didn't answer my phone to talk to you or if I just wasn't near my phone so I couldn't answer your call. Well, see, ladies and gentlemen, these are questions that may never be answered. Even if you ask me, because if you do, I will change my voicemail to something like, hello, this is Martina, please leave a message. But, yeah, I feel like that this is a really bad situation for if someone were dying right now, like if they're suddenly being murdered by bears and they want to call me for some reason, which is weird, because why would they have a phone on them if they're getting attacked by bears? But then, you know, my voicemail is so long, so they'd probably just hang up and call someone else, but their voicemail is probably also like those weird ones where they're talking to you, so you think that you're talking to them, but it's actually their voicemail because they tricked you. People are so weird. Okay, this is already too long. I'm probably going to change this later, but it's too hard. Yeah, okay, bye. Please leave me a message.
I don't know. Did you guys hear that? Could you hear that? All right. Joan. Joan, I invited you to speak, but maybe it didn't allow you in, or maybe I'm just not using this correctly. Let's see. Invite Joan. Joan says, my husband and I have a 7-month-old Australian Shepherd. We had training that was money down the drain, unfortunately. I have multiple sclerosis, and I need Rocky J to go with me to my appointments. Have you ever trained service dogs? Joan. It's knocking you off, I think, and then it's going to cue you to, like, I mean, try and get you to join again as, like, a presenter. But make sure you're not doing it from your phone. We are working to get it now, Joan says. I don't know. You're working to get it now. Okay. Well, let's keep trying to talk. Or, you know, if you want, Joan, you could just call me and we can talk that way. Joan, I am going to invite as presenter. There you are. We are on the computer, says Joan. Okay. I've invited you as a presenter. I do not know a lot about training service dogs. I do think with a puppy, you need to focus on the socialization. I'm always like, I feel like I've been punished for talking about service dogs in my career. Like to the point where I don't even know if I want to talk about service dogs. I wrote a blog post 5 or 6 years ago where I was trying to make the point that people lie about their dogs being service dogs. I think part of the time out of ignorance, part of the time because they just need to get their dog from point A to point B, and saying that the dog is a service dog seems like a shortcut. I think there are like any number of reasons why people lie about it. And I admitted that there have been times when I've lied. Anyway, the point I was trying to make when I wrote this article was that there's a lot of misinformation about service dogs, but really, like, ideally we should be training all dogs who are going to be out and about in our world to be like the best dog citizens possible, rather than having like some people like fake disabilities, rather than focusing on like the dog's ability. They're like faking their own disability rather than we're saying that they have a disability, which is like, you know, there's a lot of gray areas there. There are certainly like legit service dog out there, but then there are also people who just like have a well-trained dog and they need their dog to go somewhere with them. And you know, I've been guilty, like, you know, one I've done a lot is like had my dog in a backpack in the post office. And you know, it's too much to get into, but anyway, there's a lot of anger. There was a lot of anger from the dog service dog training community to me. It was like, and it was like super personal and scary. And they were like calling my house and saying like, I hope your dog dies a miserable death. And I realized afterwards that what I had written came across as like a recipe for like how to cheat the system, which was not what I intended at all. What my intention of the article was saying, like, why don't we work towards all dogs being better trained, so that like they're generally more accepted, or that, or are working to train people to know that their dog can, should or shouldn't be in X, Y, or Z situation. And then, you know, there should be like the elite dogs who are actually trained to provide a service for the person that they're with, which is the point of a service dog. I was kind of saying like, I wish there were some other like gray, I mean, some sort of like zone, some sort of thing that I guess like there's canine good citizen, but something more than that, that people could, you know, use as a shortcut to let others know, like, hey, I'm actually a responsible dog owner. Like, I've trained this dog to be in lots of different situations, X, Y, Z. So I guess that's my like really long way of saying, Joan, Joan, I'm sorry. I know you're still trying to get in. Joan, I'm gonna message you via email my, phone number here, and just give me a call or do FaceTime or whatever. My face is in a particularly bad spot for FaceTiming right now, but 4-4. Okay, Joan, go check your email. That's my long way of saying I don't know a lot about training service dogs. I think if you have a seven-month-old, the main thing you should be focusing on is socializing him to new places, new environments, making sure that, like, you know, he is comfortable in every possible situation and doing so in a really thoughtful way. You know, it's I'm always saying, you know, dog, we think about dog training as something that, like, someone comes in and does to your dog, but really it's so much of it is about, you know, before you ever get to that point, is just teaching your dog to, like, feel comfortable in the world. Once you have that built, that foundation where your dog feels like, you know, oh, good things happen whenever I'm with Joan, whenever I'm in, whenever I'm in any, you know, these new places, the better sort of foundation you're laying for, like, the house that you'll be building when you start teaching more specific things. So, you know, that's why, you know, the direction that we went in with, like, our self-paced online course is, like, our courses, like, we have a course that's about, like, you know, you can teach these specific behaviors. But then I also did this course that's called the good dog training course, which is, like, the, I guess, like, flagship course or whatever. It's a few hours to get through. Rhonda, you did it. But the idea was, oh, hi. Is this Joan? Yes. Oh, hey. How are you?
Joan, and here's John, my husband.
Oh, hey. Okay.
And Rocky. Jay, do you see him?
Aw. Hi, he's cute.
Hi, we're so sorry to hear about Amos.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, just those moments in life that you hope never come, and then they come, right?
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for taking my for helping us.
Yeah, tell me what's going on.
We are overwhelmed, to say the least. To give you a quick synopsis, I have been hospitalized cross-country and back since 2011. Just got out 2018. I've had dogs before in excess of 10 years. And I thought that, you know, we could get a rescue. But unfortunately, with COVID, they were completely out. So my husband surprised me with getting a purebred, which is Rocky J. And he is, oh my Lord, when we first got him, because I told him I didn't know anything about an Australian Shepherd, that breed. And when I was asking questions, they told me that, oh, he's going to be more docile than a German Shepherd. They lied. Oh my God, Jesus. It's like we have, Rocky is, we're in his world. We're just a part of whatever Rocky does. So he's biting from furniture. He's ripping things up. The previous trainer, and I'm not trying to be, you know, negative towards the trainer. He didn't do what he said he was as far as the obedience training. And I'm needing.
Where are you located, Joan?
We're in Lower East Side.
Oh, you're in Manhattan?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And I'm from California, but I was brought here for NYU Langone Hospital.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
But I'm here to stay, and we are literally, I've been up all night, and I know about the bad news. Unfortunately, I had to leave my other puppy behind. I've had him, oh goodness, since 2014, and we were supposed to be going back to see him. He's with my family has been turned completely upside down because of my hospitalization, and I wanted to see him so badly, but COVID, it's just, it's too much.
Is how long have you had this puppy?
We've had him since May of this year, and we have spent in excess of what, $15,000
on what, training?
With the training part was only $600, but going with medical bills, we're going and getting things because he's torn our home apart. And we're replacing things. I'm like, my husband's going to end up divorcing me because he has literally, if you saw this home, everything's turned upside down, literally. And we're just needing so much help just for him to.
Can I ask what trainer you worked with or what kind of stuff you were doing?
The trainer we work with, and again, no disrespect, His name is Sam. He's supposed to be training like military train. And that's how my German Shepherd was trained before. Extremely,
Well, what did they have you? What did they have you doing, or what did they say they thought would work?
Walk on leash, off leash. Listen to your command. When you say sit, he sits, which I had already taught him the basics. But he said that he would be able to roam around the home without me having to put him in the kennel. He would not bite our furniture or chew our furniture any longer, or take our shoes, or just jump on our beds, jump on us, bite us, nip us. God in heaven, the list goes on. And being able to walk off leash outside when my husband takes him out, because of the fact that my gait is off and I'm not able to go out a whole lot, as well as the temperatures. If it's too hot, then unfortunately that will send me back to the hospital.
Yeah. So I mean, a few kind of broad suggestions.
Yes.
I don't think this is about like throwing money at the situation to find the perfect trainer or whatever, perfect daycare. I think this is like an issue where, first of all, it sounds like there just needs to be some management like of the space, and also of like his energy, you know, figuring out like how you can help get his energy out in an appropriate way within confines of your life and your home. And like, frankly, that seems like it might be a really big ask, because like you're saying you're in and out of the hospital.
Excuse me. With COVID, I've been homebound, but they need me to come back in November because I've been home. And I can't. I have to be in isolation just because of the high risk that I've been.
So you're working from home?
I haven't been working. I've been disabled, unfortunately. My husband is frontline, and literally after he gets off his shifts with his patients, then he's coming home, and before he could close out all of whatever he's doing with work, he takes Rocky out for about 2 or 3 hours to just run and go to the dog park and just get that energy out and then come home. And it was working, but lately, I don't know if it's because we unfortunately have dealt with a lot of death this last week from COVID. And sweetheart,
I'm sorry. Ugh. What a year. Listen, I mean, I don't know 100% about your situation, but it sounds to me like you need to do some like space management and making sure that, you know, he's getting enough exercise, that he's also getting enough time with other dogs. Like, he's still a young dog. He probably still needs to be playing with other dogs.
Yeah.
He does. You know, if you're in the Lower East Side, if your husband can bring him, we have Schoolyard, which is like our off leash dog time. There's a trainer there always. We monitor the play, we curate the groups. I think it's like, you know, a really great way for dogs to get their energy out. It's much more controlled health wise than you're going to get at a dog park, because it's like, you know, it's only our members. I mean, not to plug our services, but to plug our services, I would say, I would suggest doing a private. Go ahead.
Excuse me, not to cut you off, Annie. Our vet, Dr. Fish, by Clinton Veterinarian, is the one who told us about you. And we were looking at, in fact, your intents. Do you still do? I think it's for 6 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. It was on your site, like for 3 hours a day for 6 weeks.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to like get in the particulars right here about like what we could offer until you do a private session, which I would say you should do. Ideally in person. You could do it virtual if your husband wants to come in. You know, we're doing masked sessions. Probably be a 2-hour session with one of our trainers. Those are the three things I would suggest. Sign up for our Schoolyard. Well, I guess, what are you feeding him?
We're a Purina, the tender, is what we were told to
okay,
stay
well,
with.
Get him a better food for sure.
Thank it, you. Like, I thought so. Okay.
I did a podcast episode with the woman who runs truthaboutpetfood.com, and now I only want to get like things that are on her list. I think
okay.
She puts out a list. You can buy it for like $25 or something. And
okay.
She's really researched which brands. I mean, especially saying this now with a dog with cancer, like don't give him the Purina. I think if you're traveling and he needs to have it once in a while, but I think, you know, that stuff can build up in their system and it can be not good, and dog food isn't all the same. So listen to that podcast episode if you haven't, because like I learned so much talking to her.
Okay.
Also feed him in toys if you're not already doing that. Like you need to be doing everything you can to like focus his attention onto appropriate things. If we have a ton of toys at our studio. We have the online store. Our specialty is like work to eat toys, puzzle toys, that kind of thing. You know, don't think about like these are treats and this is food. Like, just he can have the, and that's the other thing is like focus on like giving him his food in a way that's going to like help encourage behaviors that you want, you know, like how can you use his regular meal? I mean, and actually if you're going to use kibble, although I'd probably pick a better kibble, that's one place where you could use use like a treat and train. I'm a big fan of treat and trains. They're like a remote controlled device that, and if you, you know, considering that you have mobility issues, that could be a way to work with him. I think it's great that you're getting him as much exercise as you are getting him. I just think we should like maybe tweak that exercise so it's more social, and also getting him some like mental mouth exercise in the form of toys, and focus. Don't focus so much right now on like I need him to be a service dog for me. Like I said, like. I think there's time for that. Right now you need to like have a dog that you can live with at all. And you know, you like Yolanta said in the comments here in the webinar, like Aussies are a challenging breed. You know, you've got work to do. I think it can be done in a New York City apartment, and you can also, you know, so much of what we do at School for the Dogs is like training fun stuff, like training stuff you can do in small spaces, because, you know, when you have like a working breed dog or sporting dog, like a dog who's like meant to be out on, you know, 5-hour hikes every day, you know, chasing the foxes on, you know, or whatever, herding the sheep, like we need to, you know, our goal is to like help you figure out what you could do in order to channel his energy into things that are appropriate to do in an apartment. Do you use a crate with him?
I'm sorry?
Do you use a crate with him?
Yeah, we have a kennel, yes. And just to let you know that my husband does take him out to the dog park. He does have friends. He is not spayed. And Lord have mercy, we found out that he's a bit of a stalker with the female. There's one female dog specifically that he stalks. And the doctor said that we're going to have to watch out because when his energy level higher, he started to run.
I would get him fixed. I think the dog park's fine. You probably shouldn't be bringing him to the dog park if he's not fixed, in my opinion. And I would get him fixed. It also, you know, it could affect his behavior in a good way. I mean, it might not, but I think there's no reason for him to, I mean, considering all the things you're describing in your situation, I don't think it's a great idea to have a unneutered dog, if anything, on the streets of New York City, where there's just like there's just too many variables. Like I'm trying to like figure out how we can like make your life with this dog simpler.
Right.
And that's certainly one thing I would do. And yeah, I mean, the dog park can be great, especially if like your husband's like coordinating and knows who else is going to be there. Like the benefit of like the schoolyard is that, well, like again, it's like a closed sort of community, so which at this point in time, I think is a good thing. But also like, but more than that, like we have someone who's in charge, and I think that makes such a difference. Like I wish every dog park had like a lifeguard or something, because like when I'm at the dog park and I see stuff happening that I think really shouldn't be happening, that is not in the best interest of the dogs. Like
yes.
Nobody wants to hear from like random old me in the dog park. No one wants, but at our studio, yes, we have, you know, it's like a great thing to have someone in charge who can help explain when things are okay and aren't okay, and make sure everybody's like that every dog's safety and like happiness,
yes,
is the priority, which I think, and I don't think that's necessary. Like some people want to go to the dog park. I think, I mean, I'm, that I'm just speaking like incredibly broadly. I know nothing about your dog or your situation, but I think that, like, for instance, like, there are people who want to go to the dog park because they want to be in the park, you know, like they want to go out and are not necessarily like focused on whether it's the right thing for their dog. But right. I've been also, I mean, to be totally honest, I also did a podcast recently about rehoming dogs, and I've been feeling like sometimes it's, again, I don't really know that much about your situation. We've only just talked for a few minutes, but I am a big believer in, like, if you can find a better situation where that dog is going to lead a happier life and some other family is going to be, you know.
Actually, no. We're, just to let you know, we're going to be moving in another area in probably Battery Park City. But we were even thinking, like, getting a second dog and having them to breed one time and then keep the puppies. With our various family members and friends, we would be giving as a gift to, and then after that point, then neutering our Rocky, both of them together, if that makes sense. And at the same time, I am walking now, where the doctors told me that I would never walk again, because my goal is to be able to return back and to run the New York Marathon. That's when I fell ill.
Oh my gosh.
Unfortunately, back in 2011. So now I am walking, and I wanted to be able to walk with Rocky. He is doing well. We just need him to be more, like, calmer and able
to. Yeah. Well, let's set up a time for you to do a session. I mean, again, my candid response is that I would work on Rocky before you get another dog. I would suggest neutering him, and I would advise against breeding him and having a non-spayed, you know, female and a non-neutered male in Battery Park City for a lot of reasons. I also think, like, I would just generally discourage people from breeding dogs themselves, just because I think it's like something we should leave to professionals who are doing it really right. Like, you know, I think doing genetic testing is really important. And there are a lot of other factors as well. Like, I personally would rather leave breeding to, like, the elite few who, like, devote their lives to it than have it be something that, like, I'm trying out. I know saying, like, hey, don't let your puppy have puppies might not be, like, the thing that you don't want me to want to hear. But that's, again, this is, like, my shooting from the hip advice to you. You know, having not talked to you before, but, so I suggest working on, you know, getting, him through his, like, this adolescent period, make the dog that, like, help put in the work now to, like, make him an awesome companion for you. Good dog, gonna be able to, you know, live here or Battery Park City or wherever. But, you know, this is the moment, like, he's not even a year old. Like, this is the moment where you need to be focusing on his socialization, his ability to, like, exist in the world as a happy dog. And, like, I think that probably a second dog is not, like,
Annie, I'm sorry, excuse me. No, not now. After he has to be thoroughly, completely trained.
Well, I also think that, you know, training is not like he's going to be trained and then he's trained, you know, it's like a continuous thing.
Right.
But I also think, you know, I would neuter him for, you know, some of the reasons we went over, but let's chat offline and let's set you up for a private session. If you want to do the good dog training course, I think you probably get something out of it. You can get there at schoolforthedog.com/courses. You can get through it and probably, you know, an afternoon. If I think it might just help you, like, think about dog training in a slightly different way. It's not like a place where you're going to find, like, the exercises, but you're going to find sort of like a broader way of thinking about it. All right. I think I have, Anna says, I survived 7-month-old husky, so I can relate. Yeah, I mean, you have your hands full. And I wasn't saying, like, you should find another home for your dog at all. I'm just saying, like, if you did make that choice, like, I wouldn't judge you. I would just think, like, okay, that was maybe not the right choice for this family in this situation, et cetera, et cetera, rather than you trying to, like, you know, turn your life into a pretzel in order to accommodate what sounds like he's just like a young, healthy, probably normal dog.
Right.
You just want to make sure he's getting like, you know, getting trained in such a way that he's going to be able to be the companion to you that you want.
Anyway. Oh no, Rocky J is stuck with us for life. He's our baby. We're going through it with him, and he acts out. We have to act out right along with him. So we're learning together.
All right. Well, let's get in touch. Off of here, and I'm glad you're here. Thank you.
You're welcome. Should I just wait for your call?
Yeah, I'll email you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, and my prayers are with you and your baby.
Thank you, Joan. Thanks. All right. Bye.
Thank you. Take care.
Rhonda, did you want to chat? Are you still here? My eyes are looking better now. My dog is still adorable. Hey, buddy. I love him so much. Oh, okay. Someone's speaking. Let's see if this works. Rhonda, are you here? Any tips on getting through the death of a pet? I've done it before. Most recently, my cat, Sylvia.
I am back, I think.
Hey.
I'm in here. There I am.
Yeah.
Okay, now I just feel like I want to talk about Amos.
No.
I met Amos, if everybody was there. I met Amos when he was like, I remember when you went and you dressed up as like Dorothy and Amos was Toto.
Yeah, I have that photo somewhere. That was a few months after I got him. I mean, he's just been such a part of my life for like, since I was 25, you know, it's just intense. And I feel like
we have so many things, like all the temporary apartment and like Amos is like always been there. I know, I can't imagine like an Annie without an Amos. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel just lucky to have had so many years with him, and like lucky to have to be like that. You know, that he and Magnolia have had such a sweet relationship. And
he's so good with her.
That, like, it's been her first experience of, like, loving a dog. And I also feel glad that, like, you know, I have this, you know, family with Jason. Or, like, you know, it was just the two of us for so long, just me and Amos. And, like, I would have just been wrecked without him, you know? Like, it's funny I think about, like, you know, it was just the two of us for, God, like, well, Sylvia, also, Sylvia.
Okay, so, poor Sylvia.
Anyway.
I know, I was just talking to David, actually, like, was it this morning or last night, we were talking about the dog training, and I was, like, kind of, like, going down the rabbit hole that I'd be going down, and then I was like, well, we're just going to do whatever Annie tells us to do, because Amos is so nice, and we love Amos so much, and so whatever Annie tells me to do, we'll do it. Because I've never had a dog. But, like, no, but we love Amos. I was like, Amos is always so happy when I come over. But I was like, but then he knew me as a puppy. So maybe, like, I'm fooled. But he's just, oh.
I mean,
he's like the best doggy. He's such a little doll. He's such a good little doggy.
Hold on. I need to pick him up again.
Okay. How's he feeling? Oh, you don't have a phone.
Hi, sorry.
Yeah, okay. Does he feel sick? Like, does he have
symptoms? No, his appetite hasn't been good. But overall, he's really seemed okay. He seemed in the last, you know, few months, like, he's just got a lot older.
Yeah.
And of course, now I'm like, should have dropped him to the vet sooner, and like, I should have been worried sooner, but it just seemed like, you know, I was chalking things up to like a degree of like old manness in a 15-year-old dog, you know?
Yeah.
And, but he, I finally brought him in because he had like some blood in his stool and kind of off and on, and also his appetite had just really been dwindling, and he's always been a voracious eater. But anyway, I think, you know, to bring it back to you and you getting a puppy and me now as a dog trainer.
I know, what a long journey.
I know.
From like the Observer and doing stories about love dolls on Madison Avenue.
I know. It's funny because it's like I had this like whole other life before I became a dog trainer that like feels kind of like.
I don't know if you guys know, but she wrote like 2 books. Annie has.
I wrote a lot of articles. I wrote a lot of articles about weddings. Anyway, my love. Anyway, what was I saying? I think one thing that I did write with Amos, even before I did wrong things with him. You know, I like pushed him down to the ground and yelled in his face. And I mean, I did things that to me are now like so freaking ridiculous. Let him cry in his crate when he was a puppy till he, you know, pooped himself. I brought him to this training class where the woman would walk around and like squirt the dogs with water bottles just for like no good reason, and this other dog kept like pouncing on him, and I remember, and he was little and the other dog was like big, and I remember her being like, oh, he thinks that Amos is a squeaky toy, like it was a funny thing, which now looking back, like it totally wasn't funny. Anyway, I just think that I always brought him everywhere,
yeah,
when he was a puppy, but also, you know, throughout his life. And I think, like I said, even before I was like studied to become a dog trainer, I was doing the thing I just by, you know, luck or instinct of like looking at socialization as like a lifelong process. And like, I want this dog to feel good about me. I want this dog to feel good about me in all these different situations. I want the dog to feel good about other people. I want a dog to feel good about being on a train and a plane. And like, you know, that like,
yeah.
It benefited me to have a dog who was happy to be with me and could be with me. And it benefited him because it meant that like he could go more places with me and just be with me more.
It's also a nice little transportable size.
Yeah. Well, I think there's like a real benefit to getting small dogs for that reason. Is it's like, it's especially, you know, if you don't have a car, like to be able, I mean, the fact that he's been able to travel in a backpack, like I've been able to bring him like all over the world. You know,
yeah,
and I mean, we spent 3 summers in Italy and Greece together, and
we had a really good life.
Yeah, we lived in San Francisco together when I was
I forgot about 27.
Oh my god. Oh, anyway, I will get through this, but it sure is that, you know, that feeling that like that phone call from the vet that like you dread getting, you know, the whole time you have an animal. Got that call today. Anyway, I'm still processing. Why don't you tell the with your journalism background? I challenge you. Your journalism background and current ground. I challenge you to say in a concise way the story of you getting.
I think the best person to tell the story actually is my 13-year-old son who was in the room and then just left. But so my children have
tell him to come back.
Okay. Theo, come here. Okay, here he comes. He'll tell you. Let him tell you. He's so good at this. But so this has been how many years, Theo? Okay, come in, you can join this call. So I have to put Theo. Let me see if we can do this without the headphones and see if it works. If it doesn't, because then Theo, here, Theo sit. You can tell this is a little webinar. There's other people. Here, Theo, come closer. He's sitting lower. He's taller. He's not quite as short as
say
this.
Hi to Theo. I knew Theo when he was in his mommy's belly.
So I'm going to try to take myself off.
I helped pick his name, kind of.
Okay.
Not working, Rhonda. Rhonda, you put one AirPod for you and one for him. All right, we've lost Rhonda. Guys, if you're here, please say hi to Theo. And give me any tips on how to get over the broken heart one experiences when one finds out one's dog is going to die. Rhonda, I still don't hear you. Rhonda, you want to just, you want to just call me? I'm just going to call Rhonda.
Did I screw it?
Yeah, you screwed it up, but I can hear you now. So talk this way.
Okay. Sorry, everybody. So, now I hear myself twice. Okay. So we wanted a dog. My son wanted a dog. My kids wanted a dog for years. I did not. I've never owned a dog. My mom's allergic. I was always really afraid of dogs. Like, not afraid of, like, they don't make me nervous, but just afraid of, like, the idea of being a dog owner because they seem to me really, like, foreign. Hold on, I gotta take this.
Did we lose Gio?
What's happening with my speakers? Do you want me to call? I'm sorry, Ryan. Can we go back? You want to disconnect me and reconnect me?
Okay, sure, sure. Technology. Thanks to those of you who are still here. Oh my God. I have a hair that's meant for radio right now. Rhonda, girl, Rhonda Rocks has joined the room.
Sorry.
Oh, there she is. I hear you now.
Am I better? Sorry, everybody. I didn't mean to cause a technical catastrophe. I apologize.
It's okay.
Okay. So as I was saying, my kids really wanted dogs, as people do. I grew up without any pets. My mother was allergic to fur and feathers. So I had a lot of anxiety just about the idea of owning a dog. They were like very foreign to me as somebody who never had one. So I have like my experience with dogs was always just like Amos. It was probably the only dog I ever really liked. Like other dogs, like get me nervous. Big dogs made me nervous. I didn't really know what to do with dogs. So I just kind of hunted for years and years. And then the pandemic happened and the kids were really dialing up the pressure. In the beginning of the pandemic, it felt to me like just too much. Like there was just, it was too difficult to bring a dog into our family. And then by summer, you know, when it became clear, like things were opening up, we'd be able to sort of do things again somewhat, but it felt like it was clear that this was going to go on for a very long time. I just could just see the loneliness in my kids, especially my son, the one who came in who really wanted the dog. And I just started to feel like this was something they really needed and that it just became clear to me like we needed this happy energy. And I understand like they're a big lifetime commitment and I don't do things lightly. You know, like I, having had two kids, I know what it means when someone says something's a lot of work. So I felt also early on that the pressure was going to all fall on me, but then my husband's been home indefinitely working from home and he's been more able to participate. And so I felt like, okay, we can actually share this, you know, maybe there is a place for this. So we started looking for a dog and, I was consulting Annie. So there was like, and Annie was like, get a rescue. But as the woman, earlier woman, Joanne said, like, there weren't that many rescues to be found. And also I really wanted something that was a low shedding breed to reduce the allergens because my son is allergic to cats and my mother's allergic to everything. And I thought, well, if I can just have at least a low shedding breed might reduce how many allergens are in the house, even if that's not true. And there was also a bit of politics in that. Like if I get a dog and my mother's mad at me, at least I said I tried. So
that's what was interesting. I mean, not interesting, but I think what makes you probably quite relatable to a lot of people is that you felt like you had to get a dog that wasn't going to shed. Like, I feel like a lot of people, or, you know, like the allergy thing, like, I feel like a lot of people would go get a rescue dog, but that is like, that is the thing that stops them.
Is the shedding. Yes. And that, like, and then the other thing is, like, even if there were no allergies, I'm kind of a neat freak. I, not to plug myself, but I wrote a book called Right at Home about how to care for your home. So I'm like, kind of like, that's my whole specialty, is like your home being a tidy place. Not that my house is like, looks like a page out of Dwell magazine by a long shot, but I'm like a big fan of like tidiness, and throw pillows are like a big deal in my life. And, you know, so I was like really possessive of my house looking nice. And like, I can't, like, when I go to someone's house and my feet are covered with dog hair, I just, I'm like, so I just like couldn't, like, you know, I just was like, that was a part of it, was also, like, I had this element of like, it would be nice if the dog looked like the look of the house. I mean, so it was terrible, but like shallow could be.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, evolution is a funny thing, right? Like, these low shedding or non, you know, I don't think there's a really non shedding dogs, but these low shedding dogs who have hair rather than fur, et cetera, are evolutionarily getting a leg up, because we live in these small spaces with our, you know, tidy homes.
Right. And then, so then my daughter's bestie wanted a dog too. And you actually sent me a link to a breeder who had a cockapoo.
And yeah, this is where I feel like I really failed, because I feel bad now that I did that. Because
they got that cockapoo.
I know, and I feel like, I mean, I know, and I mean, again, like, I'm just very anti, like, puppy mills. And what's funny is, like, the best book I've written, like, the best piece of dog journalism I've read, I mean, in the last few years, was The Dog Merchant,
which was Kim.
I read, not knowing that you are friends with Kim, who wrote it. Kim Cavan, is that her last name?
Kim Cavan, yeah. I mean, I know her. We professionally know each other. And she advised me, was like, because I was interviewing her for a story about something about people decorating their homes with dogs for, you know, anyway. And so I interviewed her, and then she was telling, because she had just written this big story in the Washington Post about, like, this is the biggest run on dogs in American history, and you can't get a dog to save your life. And she gave really good advice, which was like, you have to go to the breeder. Like, even if they say all these nice things and they have a really pretty website, nothing means anything until you actually see what they have, that they'll tell you whatever they want you, whatever you want them to hear. And so the breeder that you sent me, that I sent to my friend, she went and got the dog. But I called her and I didn't like her, because she didn't have any information about the dogs. And I was like,
right, okay, well, so, just background, I first said,
go to a good breeder.
Yeah. And I said,
you gave me good names, notes,
like, which I always recommend, like, the same, like, two or three people. There's Red Teddy Poodles, who I've seen great dogs from them. And then Cherie of River Valley. But they're backlogged. And I suggested, what I also sometimes suggest is, like, ask if they have any older dogs that they're, like, rehoming.
Right. So what we did.
But then I said the thing that I regretted saying, which is, like, well, you could look on Craigslist. But then, I think it's generally a bad idea to get a dog on Craigslist for a lot of different reasons. But one of the reasons that I was reminded of when I re-listened recently to the podcast episode I did with Cherie was that, some of them might be stolen puppies, like going to breeders and stealing puppies, which is just so super creepy, shady. Anyway, I mean, I'm sure there's also, like, perfectly fine people on both sides.
Well, there was one woman who I called who was like, this is a scam. Somebody steals my phone number and posts my dog all the time. It's my dog. I'm not giving my dog away. Like, she's like, so there was that. But
must be some, like, jilted ex-lover that's like, I'm just posting your dog on. Also, creepy things that happen. I think there's too much chance for creepy things to happen on Craigslist. And then you were sending me puppies from, like, breeders that you were finding, like, in Pennsylvania. And I just know that there's, like, a lot of breeding going on in Pennsylvania, a lot of Amish people breeding. I don't know how much of it is legit. I don't know how much of it is puppy mills. Like, I really just don't know. But to fast forward to the fact that It seems like you actually went out there, did the legwork, and you found a breeder that you feel good about, right?
Right. So we had.
How was the first two breeders are, unless you want Theo to talk about the three breeders that you met with. Unless
okay,
Theo wants...
so I found first.
Where's Theo? I wanted like a Theo show. No.
He gave up. This is no patience. He had no patience. I don't. Right? He's probably in his video game land. I don't know. See how long I. So he well, if you get him back, Theo. Well, anyway, let's. So okay. So what was it? Oh, so I tried these American Kennel Club breeders for Bichons actually, and they all told me they were breeding show dogs, and they gave me I had to fill out these applications, and they all had the dogs were going to be born in October, and I called them all, I like was all online, and I got ghosted by all of them. So then at that point, I now promised the children that they're going to have these dogs, and now we're in October, and I'm ghosted. So that's when I went to the Amish breeder land. And there's these websites that are dog breed, you know, they have these breeders. And so I found three breeders that had poodle puppies that were ready to go home in Lancaster County. So we drove out to them and we said to ourselves that we were going to tell all of them that we would make a decision later, but we weren't going to immediately get any puppy. So we went to the first one and, you know, it was like, he was a salesman. He had like, he told us to call 45 minutes before. We're on his front lawn. He has his 3-year-old daughter. It's this litter of puppies. The mom's nowhere to be found. It's clear. The more I ask him, it's clearly a puppy mill. Like he has a bunch of different dog breeds. He keeps them in like a kennel place. So you realize the dogs aren't living with him and his daughter. It's not clear if the dogs are living with this little girl. She's obviously been around puppies, but I didn't get the feeling she'd been around these puppies. Like she was just as excited to see these puppies as we were. So he was like nice, but very salesman-y. And when we said, well, we need to think about it, he got really kind of like, well, I'm going to go out and you can't have, they won't be here later. And I'm like, you got like 8 puppies here. Like they'll be here later. And so I just was like, oh, and felt icky. So then we went to the second breeder and it was like this old, and these are all Amish breeders. Second was this old Amish guy. He's on his farm. It's like a compound with like a bunch of houses. He comes out, he takes us into the barn. There's 2 puppies in a crate by themselves. They're crying. Like my daughter puts one in her lap. They're like shaking. My first thought was like, get me out of here. But then like he brings them outside and they're happy and they're playing and he's talking for a while, but like, I don't know where the mother is. They're a little older by this point. They're 11 weeks. Tessa, like my daughter was like, we have to take one of these puppies. Like it felt like a rescue feeling. But I was like, it's a lot of money for a rescue. And again, like, I didn't get a sense of like
you were rescuing the puppy from a bad situation. Yeah.
Yes. And so I felt rescue this puppy.
You told me about that because you called me right after that one. And I was like, well, I mean, if you're getting the puppy, does it really matter if it's rescued or it was paid for? Like in the end, like, I understand the argument of like the puppy comes home with you in any case, the result is the same. And I like, to be honest, I think that's a lot of like the rationale people have for like going to pet stores, but then, you know, without thinking about sort of like, well, yeah, but you're also like helping perpetuate a system. Like this person right. who has like, 2 puppies in the barn that you've now encouraged
him to know, do it again. And it's not
again. And same thing with a pet store. It's like you're supporting an industry anyway.
And neither of these breeders asked us a single question about it.
But by the way, again, like you could get a great dog, right?
You could. But so I'm sort of thinking like, what is my point here? Right. You know, like, why do I, why do I care? And I think it's like, what system are you perpetuating? But I was also like anxious. Like, I don't want a dog that might already have anxiety and might already have issues and maybe is older than they said or a different breed than they said. So anyway, so then we go to the third guy and, he's also on a farm, but then we go into his barn. He has a really big barn and there's a horse. And then the next stall is like the puppies and they're all in a big, they're all in a little stall together with like straw on the floor. And it's like a nice, there's light coming through and they seem really happy. And then he's like, do you want to see the mom? And so then I was like, the first thing he said is like, well, I suppose you should meet the mother. So he brings in the mom and the puppies go bananas. And they all come clamoring out of their little stall and some of them are falling and they get on top of her and like they're running, they're barking and they start nursing her. And then he's sort of like, he's kind of like, well, she's a little tired. And he's like, are you okay, sweetheart? And he like moves her and gets her in a good position. And you can tell he feels kind of bad for the mom. The mom looks like she could have had enough of these puppies. And then 2 of them are really small. And he's like, I'm not letting these ones go yet because they're too small and they're not getting enough milk from their mother because the bigger ones keep taking it. So I'm going to make sure they get more milk. And he just seemed like he liked these dogs. Like, it was just like, I don't know if he's like does everything right, but he seemed like he loved these dogs. And he was like, I gave them a bath yesterday. And then his other, he had another dog came in. Oh, and the mother, he had just built a kennel for the mother and for another dog he had. And they had their own escape route where they went out the back to go run in the farm. They had like 80 acres, or they came in and it was like their own little cage, you know, kennel cage, and he had built it for them. And then the mother could come in and feed the dogs when she wanted to. And there was another dog who was obviously like guarding the puppies and was so sweet. He only had one eye and he was like this old dog, and he was just, and she, he would like pet the dog, and he just, and then he was like grilling us, but very calmly. Like, he was the only one who was like, poodles have a lot of energy. Do you have a yard? Do you live in New York City or in an apartment?
Yeah, he was asking you questions.
He's like, what do you do for a living? Like, how long are you guys home?
Yeah, I feel really good that you feel really good about it. And I applaud your journey. Yes.
So I felt like I didn't know what I was looking for, you know? And it wasn't until I found him that I felt like I was like, oh, this is what I'm looking for. Like, a person who cares about what he's doing. And like,
yeah.
And that these puppies.
The only thing that made me hesitate was, like I told you, you know, Cherie says you gotta do genetic testing. It's inexpensive. It's important.
Right. So
that's the only thing that gives me pause. But like I said, it sounds like, you know, on balance, like, you feel good about it. And
right. And you didn't do it. Really, and weirdly, none of them do it. And I don't know why.
Yeah. I don't know why either. Maybe let me ask. Let me ask her. I mean, she's like, you know, it's so important, and it, you know, is inexpensive. So, but if someone's not a professional breeder, maybe they just don't know to do it. But, which then goes back to the earlier person I was talking to, where I think it's probably not a great idea to be an experimental breeder. But anyway, all right. Well, I just wanted to share your experience, and I know you don't even have the dog yet. And I'm hoping that you will be coming to, Rhonda lives in New Jersey, but I've instructed her to come to play times at School for the Dogs. Because I think we have the best play times. I mean, even if you can get to one a week, I think that would be a great idea. But also, you know, one thing we've been trying to do, especially, you know, these months of COVID is help connect people who have puppies, you know, in New York City. Like, how can we connect people who can have like socially distanced one-on-one play times? Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, they could sign up and come to us, but like, they could also do it, like, you know, if they can like put up an X pen in some outdoor space, or like or do it in someone's deck, you know, like, there's ways to have socially distant, socially appropriate play time. And I know you're looking into puppy kindergarten classes near you, and my advice, anyway, we talked about this a little bit before offline, but my advice is like, call them and ask if they run playtimes, and like, what, how much playtime is part of whatever class that they do. Okay. But my suggestion would be to do a virtual class. We have some coming up but I mean, even if we can't fit you in, like, maybe, you know, find someone else who's doing it virtual, because honestly, like, I think it could be easier for families to do the training with the dog if it's virtual, because like, you don't have to worry about getting somewhere. You don't have to worry about everyone's schedule. It's safer right now.
Okay.
And, you know, you can do it in your living room, and you can record it if someone can't be there. But, you know, there is benefit to coming to a class, but in the crazy, crazy world we live in, and, you know, in your family situation, like, I would just do it virtually, as long as you're making sure he's getting playtime. And that's why I think I would reach out to those trainers who are having puppy kindergartens near you and see if they do a playtime that's just a playtime. Ideally, okay. I think it should be really no more than like four dogs and one trainer there. But come to our playtimes first, because that's where you're going to, and, you know, like, do the body language basics course, which I know you have, like, do that stuff, because you're going to go in with like an eye that's trained to figure out, like, you know, is Bowie having a good time or not? And then
when you have a class, the virtual classes you offer, like, what, a package of classes, and then we do it virtually?
Yeah, it's six classes. Okay. All right. I have to pop off because I ordered a new mattress and it's on its way. So I hate to end this call, and Rhonda, we can of course keep talking, and I know you're getting the puppy shortly.
Yes.
I also need to figure out what I'm going to do with my soaked computer. Anyway, got to end this for all of you.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Rhonda. Thank you for being here. And thanks for the rest of you for, hope this wasn't too much of like a therapy session, anti-therapy session.
All right, take care. Thanks for having me. Bye. All right, take care. Bye-bye.